From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Later on tonight, we're going to talk about human consciousness. Here's what's happening. President Donald Trump has warned the Russians not to retaliate against any U.S. strike on Syria in the aftermath of a deadly chemical weapons attack being blamed on the Assad regime. In a morning tweet, Mr. Trump referred to Syrian President Bashar Assad as a gas-killing animal and rebuked Russia for being partners with the Middle East strongman. Russia vows to shoot down any and all missiles from Syria, according to President Trump. Now, Mr. Trump's comments came following remarks from Russia's ambassador to Lebanon, who reportedly told a Hezbollah television station that Russia would shoot down American missiles fired at Syrian government targets. The vice chief of naval operations told the force that there needs to be an intense and concentrated effort to speed up weapons and technology acquisition for the specific purpose of countering massive military gains by both Russia and China. Charles R. Smith, our resident expert on many affairs, is with us right now. Charles, I want to get your take on the Syrian situation. First and foremost, it has not really been conclusive that the Assad regime launched these chemicals against his own regime and people.
Well, that is true. And I believe there are probably several people who are preaching caution within the administration, including the Defense Secretary Mad Dog Maddox, because, as you've noted, we're not quite sure. It actually could be the rebels themselves. It could be a fake. It could be Assad. It's a messed up situation, so to find out for sure would probably be a prudent thing to do.
Now, in this particular case, with the president basically threatening Russia, Russia basically threatening us, this is getting serious, Charlie.
Yes and no. I don't expect to see a whole heck of a lot of things to happen, just like with the Korean situation. Remember, what takes place in front of us is actually a showpiece, shall we say, as compared to what's actually going on behind the scenes. We saw some very heavily blusterous kind of talk during the North Korean crisis, and you can see where we've gotten to at this point. So, frankly, I don't expect to see a whole heck of a lot of direct conflict between either one of the nations.
Well, so far you've been right about the North Korean situation. Charlie, we'll check back with you. In a moment, by the way, former Secretary of Defense William Cohen joins me. We're going to be talking about his latest novel, this one called Final Strike. It's about an asteroid, but we're going to get into some world events with him as well. That's coming up in just a few minutes. The dollar struggled against the yen on Thursday as investors there sought shelter in the safe haven Japanese currency on concerns over the possibility of Western military action against Syria. Investment advisor Michael Shedlock with us. Mish, what do you think about this situation economically?
George, well, economically, politically, it's very hard to separate the two. I just don't understand all this bluster. I just don't. I don't understand Trump chastising the previous administration for getting into Syria without knowing what we're doing and then doing what we're doing. Now, China actually reached out to Trump in the trade war yesterday, and they came out and offered, I don't know, George, it seemed like some concessions. Then again, China's promised these things before and not acted on them. So Trump actually thanked China in a tweet. What did China do today? I'm shocked by this, but, you know, China said, this wasn't a concession. We're not giving anything in to Trump. It's like no one wants to agree, and they're going way out of their way to disagree on everything.
Don't you feel, though, Mish, that there's just something that just doesn't feel right?
It doesn't, George, and you can't put your finger on it here. I don't believe, let's go back to the Syria thing. Here, Trump announced he was on the verge of leaving Syria. All of a sudden, Assad supposedly did this, And now, so Trump is going to react, saying he's going to missile strike. And now Russia is saying we're going to come in and defend. George, none of this makes any sense.
No.
George, I'm just like flabbergasted. I'm with you. The public has to be concerned. I'm looking at the stock market. It's way overvalued. I'm looking at the things that the IMF is saying, that Trump is saying. The Trump has gotten into it now with the Congressional Budget Office, who came out and said his budget is phony baloney. George, something is on the verge of happening.
You got that right, Mish. You got that right. Mexico's most popular holiday hotspot, Cancun, has become overrun with drug gangs as violence in the tourist party town escalates to unprecedented levels. Cancun has seen 14 murders in just 36 hours, the highest ever in the country's recorded history. People out there say, we don't even see a police force. What's going on? It's going to kill tourism there. Jerome Corsi with us, author and a researcher. Jerry, what's happening in Mexico?
Well, I think, George, the drug war has heated up, and it's now gotten into Cancun with competing gangs, really, cartels. The Zetas are the main one in that area. But the competing gangs often just engage in simple carjacking or kidnapping of tourists. I mean, what the danger is, it's now penetrated into the terror. The terrorists have gone into the resorts. That's the big difference. And the shopping areas in Cancun, the bars, etc., are not off limits for the cartel violence.
And you know what? A lot of Brits go to Cancun, but a lot of Americans go there, too. I went there during my college days, Jerry. It's a gorgeous area. Mexico cannot afford to get its tourism wiped out.
It's a beautiful area, George. And right now, you know, the State Department is putting out warnings saying that Cancun can be very dangerous and warning tourists and college kids that on spring break, you could be entering into a terrorist situation if you go to Cancun.
Jerry, keep in touch. Jerry is also works for Infowars.com. Physical and mental exercise has been found, of course, to be beneficial for our brains, but scientists have now found that it could also improve the learning ability of our children. How does that happen? In a study of mice, researchers found the benefits gained from these activities were passed on to their offspring despite not altering their DNA. Now, how in the heck they would find out with mice, I don't know, but they did. A 23-year-old California man is suing Uber after losing both of his legs in a traffic accident that apparently happened while he was helping one of their drivers push his stalled vehicle off a highway. In a moment, New York Times bestselling author and former Secretary of Defense William Cohen joins us. His latest work is called Final Strike, and we'll talk to him about some world events next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. William Cohen served as Secretary of Defense under President Bill Clinton from 1997 to 2001. He was the 20th U.S. Defense Minister at the time, born in 1940 in Bangor, Maine. Mr. Cohen was a member of the U.S. Senate and Congress for 24 years, and he lives with his wife in the Washington, D.C. area. Noted author, by the way. He's written a number of books. And the one we're going to talk about later tonight, Final Strike, What Happens If an Asteroid Hits Us, which we've talked about on this program. Mr. Cohen, welcome to the program, William.
Well, good to be with you. Thank you.
And I want to thank you, one, for your service to our country.
I had a wonderful opportunity, thanks to the people of Maine. Thanks to Bill Clinton for giving me an opportunity to serve as Secretary of Defense. So it's been a wonderful experience for me.
I think you and I share an editor, too, at Tor Forge, Bob Gleason.
We do. He's a madman, as you know, but a talented
individual. Oh, my gosh.
He has many different arts, both light and dark.
Yeah, absolutely. And a great author himself. He's written some great books.
Oh, he is. Terrific author, yes.
He does.
And he's focusing a lot on existential threats, such as nuclear weapons.
That's right.
Destroying our planet as well. And he's written about this. He's been on various interview programs to try to alert us exactly what the dangers are. So Bob has been out there for a long time.
We will take phone calls with our incredible listeners, Mr. Cohen, next hour, and we're going to talk a lot about your latest work, Final Strike, which is very scary, but very possible. But I want to take some time, because of your background as the Secretary of Defense at the time, to get your views on just what the heck is going on these days. I mean, I was 12 years old during the Cuban Missile Crisis back in 62, but I have never recalled a moment where I have felt that this planet is on the edge of something horrible, and I just feel something. How about you? Do you feel that?
I worry about it. I think we're witnessing a disintegration of the standards which we have really tried to adhere to over the years. Following World War II, we had these institutions that were created, as Dean Acheson wrote, present at the creation. We're now witnessing kind of being present at the destruction. And so all of the institutions that have been stabilizing pillars seem to be eroding, if not crumbling, in our midst. And so, yes, I worry about it. I look at what's happening in China. I was in China 2 weeks ago, and I've been going there since, 40 years, and worry about what's happening now between us and the Russians as well, and just seeing a combination of what's happening on the technology level and political level across the world. You have more and more people obviously have access to information. We have access to more information now than any time in the history of mankind. And yet, with that information, we're not acting either prudently or wisely in all cases, in many cases not at all. So it's a bit frightening. On the other hand, there's great promise out there. The technology that is being developed is fascinating and offers great potential for humankind. But the dark side is it also offers great peril. So it's a two-sided coin here, and we're still flipping it in the air, hoping to come down heads.
We stay very nonpartisan on this program and try to call it the way we see it. And my feeling is right now that this administration seems to be kind of out of control. That's the perception. Whether you like what President Trump is doing or not, it just seems with all these personnel changes and cabinet member changes that there's something going on. I've never seen anything like this. And have you experienced that before?
No, I've never seen anything like it. And frankly, it's troubling to me that we're carrying on diplomacy by Twitter. And this is something that I never had to experience, obviously. This is something, a fairly new phenomenon. But the notion that you will actually establish policy through sending out tweets is really quite extraordinary. And it's unsettling. It's unsettling to those within our government, I suspect, especially the Defense Department, I would say, but to our allies and to our adversaries. Again, going to China, for example, the Chinese like predictability. Most countries like predictability. What is the position of the United States? What are we likely to see coming out of an administration in terms of policy? And will there be any continuity in that policy? But if you're really kind of just rolling the dice and it's a riverboat gamble from day to day, then it becomes very dangerous, especially since you have growing powers like China, Russia, resurgent Russia, and other countries trying to get nuclear weapons from those who have them, North Korea, and those who want to get them, Iran. So this is a troubling time, and what we really need is stability and not chaos. And yet President Trump, and again, I've tried to stay as balanced as I can on this, but President Trump seems to thrive on chaos. And every day is a new crisis. Every day is a new story, a new tweet, which gets the news media spun up, trying to chase the news down into rabbit holes that keep proliferating. So it's I've never seen it before. I don't think we've ever had something like this before. On the other hand, the president has his core supporters, which can find no wrong with virtually anything he says or does. So it's a different time for me, I think, for much of the world.
If you were on his administration right now, as Secretary of Defense, what would you be telling him about Syria, for example?
Well, I'd be telling him what I suspect Jim Mattis is telling him. Secretary Mattis was a colonel in my office when I was at the Pentagon, and I have known him for the past 20 years. We're very close friends. And I was the one who introduced him, along with Senator Nunn, to the United States Senate for confirmation. And you may recall that there's a rule that says a flag officer cannot become a Secretary of Defense unless he's been out of uniform for at least 7 years.
Right.
We waived that for him. I urge that we waive that requirement for him, because he's not only a great warrior, but a great scholar, and someone who's been on the front lines, and that's where he got the tag Mad Dog Mattis. And I said, no, it's really Braveheart Mattis. But nonetheless, he's been out on the front lines, and the reason the troops loved him was because he wasn't back in the rear. He was up front fighting with them and caring for them. So he's somebody who understands what war really means and has had to deal with the blood and the pain of any kind of warfare, and has been very reluctant. One of your earlier callers indicated that he was concerned about what was taking place with these rhetorical volleys back and forth. You may recall that the president was threatening fire and fury on North Korea.
That's right.
But who was urging caution? It was Jim Mattis. And it was also Secretary Tillerson, who's no longer there.
Are they playing good cop, bad cop here?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Jim Mattis is not playing any kind of games here. He's a great patriot. He didn't ask for this position. He was asked to fulfill it like a great Marine that he is and has been. He said, I'm prepared to serve my country once again. But he will serve it on terms which are pretty strict, saying, I will follow the lead of my commander-in-chief unless I find his command to be so antithetical to what I believe I can support that I no longer can serve him. I think that's his particular standard to which he always adheres. But he is somebody who said, let's step back. Let's not use the military option as a first option, but as a very, very last one, if at all possible. And so it's not a game. He's not playing games, and that's why, as the president was sending out a tweet, saying they're coming at you, President Putin. These missiles, they're new and they're smart, and we're going to be sending them soon. I'm sure that that Secretary Mattis, I have not talked to him about this, but I'm sure he was caught blindly. On
sure,
this.
I think so, too. I think so, too. Well, back to Syria for a second,
sure.
William. Why would Assad be so stupid to launch a chemical attack on his people? It hasn't been proven that he did it. As a matter of fact, he and the Russians would like an international group to come in and investigate. But why would he be so stupid to do that?
Well, why do people make stupid mistakes? He was on the verge of really consolidating all the gains and wiping out the last, not only of ISIS, but of the people whom we supported, by the way, under President Barack Obama. We're supporting the free Democrats, so to speak, the freedom fighters who are going against Assad. So he was on the verge of consolidating all of his gains. And then President Trump also said that, look, we're getting out. We're out of here in 6 months, period, and as soon as possible. And that sent a signal that he was free to clean the remaining resistance up. I don't think it was wise. Again, it's yet to be proven that he used chemical weapons. But I go back to my years on Capitol Hill. I served for 10 years on the Senate Intelligence Committee, and four of them as the vice chairman. And I saw what Assad and his father and
well, his father was a butcher.
Yeah, and I saw the experiments they were running with nerve agents on animals and other objects. There's no question that they have chemical weapons and biological weapons. And don't forget, when he crossed the red line that President Obama had laid down, there wasn't much doubt that he had done that. And I think you kind of go with the history of this. Having used it before, and now to see that these people who are choking and foaming at the mouth and shaking, the evidence is kind of, it's preliminary so far, at least, to Jim Mattis saying so.
Okay, hold on, Mr. Secretary. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back in a moment, talk a little bit more about some world events, and then we'll get into Final Strike. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're clicking off the days for our live stage show in Scottsdale, Arizona. It's coming up April 21st, and tickets are going out the window like crazy. I guess you could say it like that, but it's at the Virginia G. Piper Theater, and you can get your tickets by going to coasttocoastam.com, click the events at the top of the homepage, and it'll open up. Just remember the date when you have to click the calendar section when you get inside to their website, April 21st. It's also in the carousel reel. If you don't have a computer or if you don't use one, then there are just a few people who don't. Here's a phone number for you, 480-499-8587. 480-499-8587. There are about 45 nice seats still available. There are some seats available beyond that, but get the good ones, folks. Take advantage of it while you can. And then June 9th, Las Vegas, Nevada, a live stage show. Again, full information at coasttocoastam.com. Click our events. And welcome back to Coast. We are with William Cohen, author of Final Strike. His website, cohengroup.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We'll get into this asteroid story in a second, which is frightening, folks, because these are real possibilities. And, William, let's get back into China for a moment. You just returned from China about 10 days ago. What do you think their position is with the North Koreans? Do they have that kind of thumb on Kim Jong-un? Can they literally force him to do things?
Well, they claim they don't, but the reality is that North Korea cannot exist without China's support. China, and to a lesser degree, Russia, but principally China, providing fuel, food, other means of subsistence to the North Koreans. So that their relationship is not particularly close. On the other hand, North Korea cannot exist without them. So I was there during the time that Kim Jong-un was also there. I did not get to meet him, but it was really interesting to see what was going on at that time. And I think his visit to the Chinese had two messages. On the one hand, I think the Chinese government was saying, President Xi was saying to him, basically, we want you to meet with President Trump. We want this relationship to be resolved peacefully, the potential conflict. On the other hand, we don't want you doing something that will compromise our own sovereignty or security. That would be one message. The other message is one to us, saying, wait a minute, if you're thinking of taking military action on the border of our country, we have a relationship here. You may have to confront us as well, rather than just sitting back and letting the United States say we're going to rain fire and fury on the North Koreans. It certainly could call into question a conflict or potential conflict with the Chinese as well. So I think there were two messages there, but their position is resolve it peacefully, diplomatically, don't use military force.
You know, as a former Secretary of Defense who, had literally the ability to oversee our military, are we spread out too thin, William? I mean, we're everywhere.
We've got a smaller force than we've had in the past, and they're being overworked. And this gets back to the issue of why is our military so admired, number one, because they're out there doing the work that most Americans are unwilling to do, doing a heck of a job. The people who are serving the military, they're patriotic, they're goal-oriented, they're task-oriented. They really are the cream of the crop, as far as I'm concerned. When you see our military in action, there's none finer. But they're being over-deployed, and that's one of the problems. You can't be everywhere, but we have found that we also need to have relationships with other countries so that we don't get spread so thinly that we're really tearing at the fabric of our military and their families. What we're finding is because of the over-deployments, the smaller number of forces that we have being redeployed over and over, it's presenting real problems for them and their families in terms of How do they integrate back into the home life? The kids are growing up without them, higher divorce rates, alcoholism, et cetera, because so much stress is being placed on them. So we've got to, as a society, decide either we get much bigger or that we get much more discriminating in terms of where we deploy our forces. And that means don't destroy the relationships we have with other countries. They're critical to our security as well. And we seem to be in the process of telling everybody they're on their own.
Yeah, absolutely.
But in fact, what we do is need to build those relationships so they can count on the United States with our capabilities. But also, again, they want continuity. They want to know if we say something, we mean it, and we'll continue to support them.
Final Strike. It's a novel, but it's got a lot of truth to it. The possibilities that we could get hit by an asteroid, and it would literally change the way this country is. It would change the planet, wouldn't it?
It would. People would say, "Well, how realistic is it? How much of a threat is it?" It's improbable in terms of what are the probabilities here, but possible. And so there are about 700,000 known asteroids. Some are very small rocks that burn up in the atmosphere before they reach the Earth. But many of them go undetected. There are about as many as 25,000 asteroids that are bigger, what I like to call a Mickey Mantle home run, 460 feet. Those are city busters and can wreak regional damage on a massive scale. But then there are those that are a kilometer or even bigger than that. Those are the types of asteroids that can end life on the planet itself. And so we don't have enough, we don't have the capability to detect all of them. In fact, 75% of them will go undetected. So what NASA is trying to do, what the Air Force has recommended is back as early as back in 1996, I read one of their reports about planetary defense, is that we need to find the asteroids before they find us. If we find them out in space, far enough out in space, we can, in fact, help deflect their orbit if
That's
they're
right.
coming into conflict with Earth. But if we only have, Charles Bolton, the former director of NASA, he said, if you give me 3 weeks, it's time to pray. And so going back just 3 years, we saw a small asteroid pass over Russia, parts of Russia, Siberian forest. It leveled, it injured 1,200 people, and it leveled hundreds of acres of forest. It was only 15 feet in width. And so if you can now magnify that to be a 600, almost 6/10 of a mile, that's the end of the planet. If something like that hits, it will hit with a force. It'll come in at a speed of about 33,000 miles an hour. It will hit with the force of all of the nuclear weapons we have on the planet. And so it will lead to the destruction of life as we know it. So are they out there? Real threats to our existence, and we don't have the ability right now to detect them. And here's something people have to understand. Even if we detect them, they then go undetected. We've had large asteroids, one discovered back in 1950. We followed it for 17 days, and then it disappeared. It was not rediscovered until the year 2000. So 50 years we lost track of this huge asteroid. And we've had that with other asteroids as well. So we've got to get a space-based system which can detect where these asteroids are, how far away they are from Earth. And again, if we have enough time, we can move them. But right now, we don't have that capability.
Yeah, this is something the United Nations should get behind and back, because all nations are going to get it. It's not going to be just one country that might get hit, but it's going to affect the entire planet.
Well, as a matter of fact, what we're looking at here in terms of the novels, Final Strike is a sequel to a previous novel called Collision. What got my attention is the fact that a number of countries, including the United States, including Russia, including China, and most recently Luxembourg, are getting into the business of mining asteroids. There are trillions of dollars worth of minerals in these asteroids. Mm-hmm. And so countries and even private space buccaneers are now looking to move asteroids into a closer orbit to Earth so we can actually mine them, either robotically or by astronauts, mine them for their resources and bring them back to Earth, or mine them for water, which can then be converted into energy that help us on our missions to Mars. So what happens if we start moving them into an orbit and suddenly it gets pulled into what we call a gravitational keyhole, putting on a collision course with Earth? How do we deflect it at that point? And again, given enough time, we can. But if we don't have enough time, it's over.
We used to have a section called near-Earth tracking. Is that still around, do you know?
Yes, we still have the system, but again, it's limited because it's our tracking of asteroids is really, it's Earth-based and optical. We need to have a space-based capability that's infrared as well and that can track the asteroids that are in our solar system. So we can track them, but it's not very secure in terms of being able to maintain contact with them all the time.
Final Strike has all the makings of a movie, William. When's that going to happen?
I don't know. There was a movie made by Bruce Willis.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, this is a little bit different in terms of I tried to include in each of the novels I write, I tried to include a portion of my own experience. In A Blink of an Eye, for example, I worried about, while I was at the Pentagon, the reporters would say, what keeps you awake at night? And I would say, a nuclear bomb destroying an American city. And it did. I worried about it constantly. Obviously, I couldn't write about it then, but one of the novels I wrote is called Blink of an Eye, in terms of what happens if we do, in fact, have a bomb that destroys an American city. And the city of Savannah, Georgia, was destroyed in this novel. And you have to read the novel to find out why Savannah was a target. But it raises the issue, what happens? Number one, the United States would have to find out, who did this, how did they do it, why did they do it, and what do we do about it in response? All within a period of 4 or 5 days, because the tremendous pressure we placed on any president, you must respond to someone, and then you hope you've got the right country that is responsible for it. But I tried to take these issues, and here with the Final Strike, I wanted to include covert actions, what they call rendition actions, mm-hmm. where we have an American citizen who's being held in a hotel in Moscow. How do we get him out of there? And how do we do it in a way that doesn't start a war with the Russians? So I tried to include experiences that I've had during the course of my long career and include that as part of the novel. So it's not just about asteroids. It's about U.S.-Russia relations, about covert actions, about murder and intrigue and international operations.
If we had a six-month head notice that we knew an asteroid was coming this way, would governments tell us as people, would they inform us that this is coming?
Well, that's another issue that's raised in the novels. What would be the obligation of the heads of state of all of the countries? How much notice would you give? How much panic would you instill? How would you control the panic? What measures would you undertake? Would you declare martial law, making sure that people didn't break into riots and break into various storage supplies to get as much food and medicine as possible? When you think about it, we only have our access to food supply comes from within, let's say, 150 miles or more. What happens when that's cut off?
Oh my God.
Have a very limited supply of food and water. What happens when it gets cut off? So then you would have panic set in. You would then have to decide whether you impose martial law. How would you do that? So these are all issues that a commander-in-chief has to think about. He doesn't have to think about it on a day-to-day basis, but his Secretary of Defense, his Secretary of Homeland Security, all of those in the business of protecting our country, and the same would be applied to China, Russia, any other country. What do we do in terms of a catastrophe that strikes on a massive basis, whether it could be biological, it could be a plague that is unleashed across the world? We had something to take place back in 1919 during that time frame in which we had the flu that devastated many countries. So we worry about those things to try to prepare as best we can. Number one, understand where would the supplies be, how would we get them to people, how would we get medicines to individuals. If we had any kind of a virus that spread, would you keep people at home, would you let them come to work? You've got all of those issues that major companies now also have to have plans for what they do with their employees under those circumstances. And so most people assume that we're making those plans and taking all that into consideration, and they go on their lives without having to worry too much about it. But all of those issues we have to deal with.
One of our late friends, Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, was convinced that this planet was being visited by extraterrestrials, William. And just recently it's been revealed the government spent $22 million to try to study the possibilities. I got to ask you, as a former Secretary of Defense, did this question of UFOs, ETs ever cross your desk?
Well, I was asked frequently about Area 51 as to whether or not we were doing anything unusual out there. I never got to visit Area 51, but I raised the issue. I don't know, but it seems to me pretty extraordinary to say out of all of the planets in the universe that we're the only ones where some form of life exists. But I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Would they have told you, or would they have kept this from you? And let's say President Bill Clinton, would they have kept it from him?
The answer is no. If the Secretary of Defense is inquiring about something as important as that, or
they better tell him.
You have to. And I know there are questions now where that some sightings have been of UFOs or allegedly have been seen. I take this position. Look, we're spending billions of dollars to explore space. And what makes us think that we're the only ones who are out in space? And if we're spending billions, I know it's a big price tag for the $22 million, but if we're spending billions to find out if there's life out there, how can we rule out whether there are other forms of life not looking like us or being like us that are exploring the universe as well? So I don't know the answer to it, but this is part of we're great explorers. That's what the destiny of mankind is, to constantly explore the new frontier, and the new frontier of space.
Would you tell me if you knew?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. William Cohen, our special guest, Final Strike. That's the name of his book. We'll take phone calls. We'll continue talking about the possibility of getting hit by an asteroid and also world events next on Coast to Coast AM.